Thank you very much, Rhiannon, and good morning to everyone. I'm sure there are a few bleary-eyed listeners this morning. There certainly are in the office after a long night. Firstly, thank you very much to Victoria for joining us this morning. And most importantly, thank you to all you guys for tuning in. It was probably a bit of a surprisingly comprehensive victory last night. I think it took us all back at 10 o'clock when the exit polls came out. And obviously, as the results streamed in, it pretty much followed that order. So we have a pretty buoyant Sterling this morning, and we have a lot to talk about. So we'll get straight on to it. We appreciate it's probably a very busy day for all of you guys to get your head around what's gone on and go through your own business planning. So we'll try and wrap this up in circa 25 to 30 minutes, and we'll get straight into the core of it. So good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
I guess the first place to start, and the only place to start, is to talk through the results. It would be great to hear from you about exactly how big a win is this for the Tories, and how bad is this for all the other parties?
Yeah, as you said, it was quite staggering when the exit poll came out at 10 o'clock, because although we'd had hints of big Tory majority numbers coming through from some of the polls, I mean, particularly one that predicted the 2017 election very well. And that one, I think, had put an estimate of 68 as the Tory majority. But it was that exit poll showing it just so big, kind of above that 80 mark, that really caught everybody, investors, and I think probably most of the inside of the Tory party and everywhere else in politics, right off guard. And it's a huge win. I mean, it is. It's, you know, that is going to give the biggest majority for the Conservatives since the days of Baroness Thatcher in 1987. And equally, as you say, you know, how bad is this for everybody else? I mean, for Labour, it's horrendous. It's in Labour's worst seat total since 1935. And it's their first time in the interwar years that Labour has won less than 200 seats. So it was quite something, you know. It was really felt like, certainly in terms of, you know, recent decades, history books in the making. And, you know, there'll be a lot of soul searching going on amongst the Tory ranks and the Labour ranks and the Liberal Democrats at what exactly went right for people and what went wrong. You know, what did drive such a strong result for the Conservative Party. So we had the Conservatives up at 364. I think there's one to be counted, which will probably stay Tory. Labour down at 202, and the SNP 48. So it was a really good result for the SNP, and the Liberal Democrats in at 11. So, you know, decent for the SNP as well. Poor for the Liberal Democrats, not on the main, but particularly of note was the fact that you had Jo Swinson, leader of the Liberal Democrats, lose her seats. And the DUP, well, you had the deputy of the DUP, Nigel Dodds, he lost his seat in Belfast North, and you had another loss in Belfast South. So in addition to the kind of big ticket story, the extent of the gains and the losses, there were also some really interesting sub-stories about the people that had some shock results also. So yeah, it's really interesting. And I mean, that's just the politics without kind of getting into what it means for Brexit or anything else.
So I guess, yeah, a lot to take in. I think as we try and take it in, it feels like markets are trying to do exactly the same. I think Sterling, as we've seen, has already been very volatile this morning, as has the FTSE. It'd be great to hear your views about, you know, your thoughts on exactly what does this mean for Sterling, and maybe, yeah, something slightly broader in terms of the other asset classes.
Yeah, so as you said, Sterling has enjoyed the news, and we've seen Sterling rising, actually, I mean, in the weeks up to the result, but not to the extent that it completely believed that this, you know, this Conservative majority was going to be the outcome. And what we've obviously had overnight is the confirmation not only of that, but the extent of the move means that you know, there were really no foreseen problems, basically, in Boris Johnson getting his so-called kind of oven ready Brexit deal through. So that means that he's gonna get that through. We leave the EU on the 31st of January, and that's buoyed Sterling, because one of those big areas of uncertainty is seen as removed. The question, and you know, the thing for us actually when thinking about our forecasts is obviously where Sterling is going to go from here forward. And I don't think the uncertainty on Brexit is completely removed. So it may be, and already actually we're seeing a bit of this, because Sterling moved right up through 135 and it's come back down a bit since, is actually what's the longer term plan for Brexit? Because that's just the divorce deal. So he's got this oven ready deal. That's just the divorce. Then what? Then what's the kind of trading arrangements? So we're seeing a little bit of that in sterling. But I think in terms of sterling's path going forward, there's potentially more soul searching to come in, which could pull it a bit further down. And that's certainly our forecast, where we see sterling coming down towards the 130 mark by the middle of next year, when there's those really serious questions about what happens once the UK's trying to sort out a trading arrangement and has transition coming to an end at the end of the year.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting to add to that. I think that was a sentiment from our trading desk this morning as well, where the guy said that, you know what, all, you know, the majority of the good news is out there now. So hence why sterling dollar goes to 135, and quite a significant relief rally. But as Victoria said, has already, you know, has already retreated back down to the low 134s and the 133s.
Just if I may, in terms of asset classes, I mean, you've seen bigger moves across other areas as well. So in the fixed income space, you know, gilt yields have moved up 8 basis points, some really big moves as well in the equity market space. You know, FTSE 100 was up about 1.5% when I last checked, FTSE 250 up 4.1%. And that's really the realisation that you didn't get the counterfactual, which was things like nationalisation of big utilities companies. So, you know, typically when sterling's rising to the extent that we've seen, you know, the FTSE 100 in particular is under pressure. But obviously, because this was the counterfactual, some of these less business-friendly Labour policies, then, you know, we're also seeing big gains in equity markets.
Yeah. So really positive reaction. I mean, is this Brexit done now? You know, does this mean everything will be done and dusted by January?
The divorce deal, yes, for sure. You know, there's little chance really that gets derailed. So with a majority of 80, he'll take his oven ready Brexit deal. He'll probably put it to a vote before Christmas, and you know, the relevant legislation that still needs to be done gets done, and by the end of January we are technically out of the European Union. But then at that point, we need to move on to the next task, and arguably the bigger task, of working out how we're going to continue to trade with the rest of the European Union on a long-term basis. So from the end of January, we're in this transition phase, which lasts until the end of 2020. But then we need to sort out a free trading arrangement. And, you know, for anyone that's looked at trading arrangements and trade deals and, you know, China, US and EU and Canada, they take a hell of a long time and they're extremely complicated to do. The UK and the EU have the advantage of obviously being on a level playing field on a number of fronts already, but you know, it's still going to be a huge task. Boris has said that he won't extend the transition period, so that's in the manifesto. If you believe that, then potentially there's another cliff edge at the end of 2020, where, you know, if he doesn't like what Brussels is offering him, he, you know, with a majority of 80, might say, well, look, my parliament will back me on this, and there's the threat of a move on what you might call a no deal, a move to WTO trading terms at that point. So there's that. But also, the big majority probably makes it easier for him to throw his weight around with Brussels, because they know if they offer him something, that he can, you know, he can get it through Parliament. So, you know, it brings big threats in two directions, actually, and it's not clear cut which way it goes. But this is what I'm saying: uncertainty is the theme again next year. This is not the end of uncertainty.
Okay. So this was always the Brexit election. Be interesting to take it away from Brexit for a second and hear your thoughts on, you know, what other big policies has Boris got up his sleeve?
Yeah, so I mean, everything you heard in the election campaign was get Brexit done, and that was obviously a very conscious decision for Johnson, because that, you know, as it's turned out, was the vote winner, really. This was the thing that he thought would bring people together, and clearly it has, looking at the results. So the manifesto that they put out there is not enormous in its kind of breadth and scope and size of policy initiatives. There are big things in there, but a lot of it's actually what they were talking about when they were talking about the spending round in September, I think it was. So things like a lot more cash for the NHS, infrastructure spending, and on the tax front, there were things that we heard, like national insurance thresholds going up to 9,500, lower business rates. So more business-friendly policy, but they're not enormous things in the sphere of, you know, I mean, particularly in the context of what the counterfactual would have looked like for Labour. So, I mean, a big question this morning for us is whether with such a big majority, whether he's going to set his sights a lot higher. You know, it would be the sensible thing to do. If you've got the biggest majority since 1987, you know, you would expect to use that to drive a very strong political agenda. He's potentially got 5 years to do that. So let's say he uses this year primarily to focus on Brexit. After that, you know, will there be much bigger tax changes, spending adjustments? So we could be in for a much more radical overhaul all of the policy backdrop. And obviously, we don't know what that might exactly look like, because, as I say, the scope of the manifesto is relatively narrow. So that, you know, that could well be broadened out quite significantly. The other thing is, we don't exactly know how long the parliamentary term is, because one thing that was in the manifesto is the commitment to withdraw the Fixed Term Parliament Act, which sets the 5 year period. So, you know, if they manage to pull back on that, which you think they could do with an 80 seat majority, then they'll potentially have a bit more scope to call elections sort of as and when they want to. So that could be interesting also.
Okay. And how about more immediately? I mean, it's on his. And his triumphant speech this morning, he said, let's get breakfast done. But what about after that and between Christmas, now and Christmas?
Yeah, I could do with some breakfast, certainly. But yeah, once we've had breakfast and Brexit out the way, I think, you know, well, there's a Queen's speech to do. I mean, that's the first thing, right? So by the 19th of December, or on the 19th of December, we expect the Queen's speech to be put forward. And that is, for those that don't know, very much the policy... the policy framework which the government intends to deliver over its term. So we will hear more about that, but that we would expect that to be based on the manifesto, not on those kind of bigger ticket policy changes which would probably come down the line. So that's next week. As I said, there's also an expectation that there will be a Brexit vote before Christmas, which is you know, looking pretty like a formality at this point, given the numbers. So that's that. Then you move into January. There's legislation to get through. And then after January, things might get a bit more interesting, because the chat this morning is that it will be February, March time when we will get the budget, the long-awaited budget, because obviously we haven't had one this year. So everybody's desperately waiting to know what tax changes are going to come through in the spring. And a bigger cabinet reshuffle. So there might be a small cabinet reshuffle, perhaps as soon as today, next week. But the big changes, once he's kind of found out, you know, who his friends are, how people are supporting on Brexit, how, you know, how they're performing, then there might be much bigger policy cabinet changes to reflect the bigger policy changes. So I think the spring's an interesting period. And, you know, spring's also interesting because that's when he's going to really launch his negotiations with the EU over the future trading arrangements. So that does look to be a pretty critical point. And obviously, if we get a big shift in direction on future trading arrangements and on policy at that point, that could be, you know, double whammy for sterling once we hear that sort of news.
And final question, Victoria, before maybe there's a couple of questions that have already come in. So final question from me before we go on to those questions would be great to hear your thoughts about the broader implications for the UK economy. We've spoken a lot about sterling, but, you know, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts around growth.
Yeah, it's been a lacklustre period for the UK economy. No doubt about it. Ever since the referendum, business investment's been suffering markedly. We've also had on top of that the downside that's come from the global backdrop, from the US-China trade war. So that's not helped. But Brexit undoubtedly has been a drag, and it's been bouncing the growth numbers around quarter to quarter, depending on whether firms suddenly think that we're about to exit the EU, like in last March, where there was a lot of stock accumulation and then the unwind of that. But the drag, if you strip out all that noise, is quite clear. So you can make a case that there's a rebound to come, that one element of this business uncertainty, as we're clearly seeing reflected in sterling this morning, gets stripped out, and business investment bounces back and firms are a bit more able to add an extra unit investment, perhaps hire an extra person. So those, you know, those factors have been very clear. When you look at a lot of the surveys that come through that ask the firms what are your key concerns, these have been very tangible things. So I think even with the divorce element done and the UK leaving the EU at the end of January, that creates a boost in itself for the UK economy. But, you know, there is a limit there because, as I say, you know, if you're a footloose international investor, you still don't know whether you're going to have what tariffs you're going to face, you know, what sort of non-tariff barriers you're going to face after the end of 2020. So it's not going to be a big pickup. Our growth forecasts are a bit confusing because they look for pretty steady growth this year and next on an annual basis. But that's just a statistical quirk. Actually, it's a doubling in the quarterly growth pace next year. So it is, you know, more positive.
Okay. Just leading on to the questions that we've already got in, just picking up on the point around forecasts. The first question alludes to, we have our sterling dollar forecast in for the end of next year at 135. Do we stand by that?
Yes, we do. So our conditioning assumption is that has been that we would see a conservative majority, and admittedly, you know, I think we've all been surprised by the extent of the majority. But in terms of where it takes us on Brexit, I think broadly it's in the same direction, and therefore the kind of underpinning assumptions for the economy and for interest rates and the risk uncertainty element are very similar. So yes, 135, which, you know, as I said, given that we've moved through that point already this morning, raises the question why we're not seeing a bigger move out. And well, you know, there are a couple of points here. One is that there's still some talk about UK interest rates being lowered, and that could come from the international backdrop, from the trade war, from more concerns about the phase two of the China-US trade war. So that might provide a bit of a dampening effect. More fundamentally, the fact that the uncertainty over the future trading arrangements is still very, very significant in the middle of the year. And as the deadline, which is the 1st of July 2020, approaches to extend the transition at that middle point of the year, we could actually see sterling down to 130 because we're worried about a no-deal Brexit. You know, if this transition gets extended, which is our base case, then it rises again. But even then, even if that trading arrangement's agreed, it's not a move back to the same trading terms that we have as an EU member. You know, there are going to be more non-tariff barriers, tariffs to be paid. It's not the same frictionless trade that businesses have been used to. So you would expect that to provide a, you know, continuing dampening factor. And the global backdrop's changed. I mean, the rate differentials between us and the Federal Reserve, who all this time we've been sitting back and Brexit's been kind of running on in the background and we haven't been raising rates. The Federal Reserve has moved up and, you know, obviously they've reduced rates a few times this year, but they're still a lot above the 0.75% bank rate. So there's a number of factors that suggest that the recovery is quite gradual.
Okay. And I think that's such a, you know, judging by the conversations we've had on the phone this morning, that is just such a key topic. I think clients are asking that with the likes of sterling dollar up at 134, just trying to gauge that sentiment and probably that landscape of risk to understand what's going to hold it back and actually, you know, what if anything, what may drag it lower. And as you say, I think when you start to think about the transitional period and the risk associated with that and potential rate cuts, whilst it's immediate good news for the pound, we certainly feel like we're not out of the woods just yet.
Precisely, yeah, there's plenty more to come.
The other question that probably is of interest here is actually just on that, maybe just picking up again on that, the transition point, and just a bit more detail. The question is, how likely is the transition to be delayed?
I mean, I think more likely with the bigger majority, actually. So we were looking at this a few weeks ago and just say, look, it's really going to struggle to get to get a Brexit deal, a future trading arrangement deal, done in that time. I'm bearing in mind that they're not talking about setting out the framework for the talks until March. I mean, you know, nothing is impossible, but that was always going to be a very, very tall order. So now that he's got a majority of 80, and you've got more scope to be able to deal with the Eurosceptic kind of troublemakers, if you want to call them that, the European Research Group, which might have opposed moves to push ahead with an extension, then it makes it easier for him. But, you know, when you've put it in your manifesto, that's also, you know, quite a difficult thing to go back on. And all right, we've seen quite a lot of manifesto pledges shifted away from, but I'm not least on Brexit, actually. But it is written there in ink in something that, you know, in an election that was run on that Brexit ticket, which was get Brexit done. But I think bottom line is it's quite difficult to see that he's going to have any other choice if he doesn't want to no deal. And, like, you know, it's not my view, not our team's view, that realistically, you know, Boris Johnson wants to no deal, because I think he'd quite like to have the economic wins that would come with, you know, moving on to onto a trading arrangement rather than a no deal arrangement.
Okay. Victoria, thank you so much. I think it's been really, really helpful, really insightful to hear all of your views. A quick thank you from me to everyone for logging in. I hope that it's been useful. If there are any further questions or thoughts, please feel free to follow up with myself or your InvestDebt contact. We'd love to speak to you. We'd love to support you and make sure that you are fully briefed on what's happened overnight and what looks like will happen going forward. I think my recap on it is that it certainly feels like it's immediate good news for the economy, for business and for sterling. But there's clearly a lot of work to do. And I think on the horizon is this transitional period, which I'm sure media focus and the market's focus will turn to quite quickly in the new year. So I'm sure that 2020 is going to be another interesting year for the political front. Final thing to say is that we will be following up with a note from our economist, so please watch out for that. That'll be an in-depth note which will just go through a bit of what Victoria has spoken to this morning, and I'm sure a lot more, so please look out for that. And again, if you have any questions, please let us know. But for now, thank you very much for joining us. Have a fantastic weekend and look forward to speaking to you soon.